Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you can find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or you can go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we talk about what's happening in the world today. We talk about where we think the world is going, and we talk about the future. And we take a pretty unusual view of those matters. We believe that there's a pretty good case to be made that through a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities, our world is being transformed, that our world might just be getting better all the time. And we believe that if you're not excited about the future, you're probably not paying attention. And we believe that something is going to happen, something wonderful. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. I should have said that by the skin of his teeth.
If our audience only knew how, you know, sometimes by the seat of the pants we manage to get the show together. It's
the sheer drama of
yeah.
It all. It's just so exciting. Just for a little background, we're having a little bit of trouble with our Blog Talk Radio interface this evening, and Stephen turned the control of the switchboard over to me in the final minutes before the show was supposed to start, and right as the thing went to your show will go live in 5 seconds, we had all three of us on. So we're going off the cuff this evening. We've not none of this is rehearsed. These two gentlemen with whom I've never worked before and I've never seen before, we'll just we'll see what kind of program we can pull off. And speaking of the other gentleman on the line is our chat host Michael Darling. Hey, Michael.
Good evening. Good evening.
Welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks, Michael.
Yeah, last week I was clearly sick and then couldn't figure out what or why, and I had no fever. So I was like, yeah, don't you have to have a fever to be sick? And it turns out, no, you don't.
Guess you not, yeah.
For example, a hangover just comes to mind immediately. There's not usually a...
It's almost exactly what
sure
it felt like, not that I would know.
Yeah.
But I had not had anything that would induce a hangover in a long time, like weeks.
Huh.
Well, I felt like, you know, CRAP.
We're glad that you're feeling better. We're sure that you've got the note, for the 2 weeks absence from your mom that we can review at some point. And glad
put
to
in
have
your
you
permanent
back.
Record.
Yeah, it will go on your permanent record. To coin a phrase, back in the chat saddle.
That's right.
That's what it feels like.
Well, so for those of you listening live, we do have a lively chat getting started here in our chat room, and Michael will be the head honcho there in the chat room this evening, as usual. So that's exciting. Now, we've got kind of a mixed bag program this evening, but before we get into that, I just since I haven't had a chance to check in with either of you, anything interesting going on, new developments that our listening audience would be eager to hear about?
No, I can tell you it's been a beautiful day and beautiful weekend actually in my part of the world, and I sure have enjoyed it. But no, nothing all that exciting.
Well, it's been cold and rainy here. I don't know about Centennial, but down here in Highlands Ranch, that's how it's been anyway. Gosh, I've got nothing. I got nothing to report. No interesting. Certainly, haven't seen any movies. I don't know. Have you caught up on any of the new movies?
Well, Land of the Lost came out Friday, but didn't see it. So I'll probably catch it sometime early next week.
I've heard that's not one to take the kids to.
Really? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'll take note of that.
I heard that on the radio because you would think Land of the Lost would be a perfect movie to take kids to, and I guess there's some scatological and inappropriate sexual stuff in there that.
Yeah, maybe I need to leave them at the house, but yeah, how can I not go see Land of the Lost though? I mean. You know, whatever form it's put out, I've got to go see it. That was sort of a, I came of age at just the right moment to really appreciate Land of the Lost when it first came out. So
I totally dug Land of the Lost. And I've observed over the last couple of weeks, first Sci-Fi Network and then Chill, the horror network, both did Land of the Lost marathons.
And my kids, I'm sitting there, you know, just eating it up again, you know. And my kids are over there going, Dad, this is the lamest thing ever. That
it
may
really
be.
Is. I mean, I remembered it as being cheesy and bad, but I guess, you know, we're so used to CGI and really nice production values on everything that gets made anymore. When you look at that show, you just go,
oh,
who are these eighth graders making this, you know?
Oh, man. That's
although,
funny.
For all that, there was some actually fairly sophisticated science fiction concepts lying at the heart of that show. Do you remember the articulate Sleestak, the dude who, you know, the one who could talk?
Yeah, the one that they painted gold. Basically, they took a Sleestak and put gold paint. He was different colored, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Was he gold? Yeah.
I don't remember, but that sounds right.
Yeah.
So he was the only one who really understood what was going on. When he explained things, how, you know, they were caught in this parallel dimension and, you know, for them to come out, other people have to go in and all this kind of stuff. It really, you know, the premise of it made a lot more sense than if you're just watching it, you're going, well, they just happen to be in a place where there's missing links and dinosaurs and, you know, lizard people that never evolved, all kind of coexisting in the same universe. But the one review I heard where I heard that it's probably not as appropriate for kids is that where it kind of falls down is that it's obviously done very much tongue in cheek, and the real glory of the original series was, for as cheesy as it was, as badly put together as it was, it took itself completely seriously.
That's right. That's right. And that's, you know, sometimes that is the downfall of some of these movie remakes. Like, for example, I mean, another one that the same actor was involved in was Bewitched.
Right.
And Bewitched was a cheesy little, you know, television show, but was extremely popular, obviously. And part of it was that, you know, it took itself seriously. And so, and of course, they just made a straight kind of, you know, here's the situation, now let's just make a comedy and not take it too seriously. I don't know. That sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. But I don't think it really worked for Bewitched. So
I had no idea what they were trying to do with Bewitched.
It was strange. It was a reboot that wasn't, and I don't know what they were trying to do. Yeah, it was odd.
Yeah, there's better Will Ferrell movies out there to watch than Bewitched, and certainly better, I'm sorry, what's her name?
I'm middle block, too, but yeah.
Tom Cruise's ex-wife, yeah, her. She's in a lot of great stuff. Sorry, I can't think of her name.
Yeah, Nicole Kidman.
Nah, thank you, Nicole. Much, much better Nicole Kidman movies out there to be seen than that. Okay, so we don't have a report on Land of the Lost. I just have a warning, but it's third hand. I don't know. Roger Ebert liked it, gave it 3 stars.
Okay. Well, I'll give it a chance.
Lone voice in the universe, so we'll see. So, Michael, what about you? Any interesting stuff to report from your summer
vacation? I don't know how interesting it is, but for no particular reason, I revisited Batman Begins and Dark Knight in one fairly lengthy sitting, and came away thinking, okay, well, three things. One, the awesome story. I still think the Batman mythology of all the superheroes and all the modern American comic books and sci-fi and others made into major motion pictures. This is my favorite because at the end of the day, Bruce Wayne is just a guy. He's not, you know, a radioactive spider bite victim. He's not something else. Although Iron Man approaches that because Tony Stark arguably is just a guy, but Tony Stark has the benefit of, I think, more sci-fi. Anyway, Dark Knight and Batman Begins, awesome story. And it was a ton of fun to watch them both all at one sitting. And I think having done that with a year perspective, or almost a year perspective after Dark Knight, I know where they're going now. I know where the next movie is going to go. And I'm not telling.
Oh, come on, tell us. What? What's going to happen?
Yeah, well, it's not like it would be a spoiler, you know.
Well, I will.
You're right.
Well, they're gonna follow the path of the, and this really, I didn't get it as clearly when I saw Dark Knight the first time, but at the end of Dark Knight, it's clear that Batman feels like he now needs to take on the role where he's going to be almost bad, although you won't really be bad, so that everybody else can choose to be good. They can choose to not, you know, emulate Batman. And he's going to have to roll around in the mud a bit while still catching bad guys and helping now Commissioner Gordon. We're going to meet Commissioner Gordon's daughter, a little bit older. My guess is the next time we come back to the Batman franchise, Barbara is going to be in her teens and not the little kid who remained faceless in Dark Knight. And I'm not going to predict which bad guy is next, although that might even be public information. I try not to pay any attention. But I think there's going to be more than one. It won't be like Joker and his henchmen. It won't be Penguin and a gang. It won't be Catwoman and a gang. It'll be like multiple oddball bad guys.
Cool.
Okay.
Of which Batman will be one.
Interesting.
Interesting predictions. Well, I to me it's
and we'll get the Batcopter.
Awesome. I hope so. I love the Batcopter.
We had the motorcycle. We've had the car. I don't think we're going to get the submarine in the next one, but we are going to get the helicopter.
Have we even had the speedboat? I don't think we have.
No.
We need the speedboat and the helicopter. Now, I would go off on a whole thing about how it's really inappropriate to introduce Batgirl unless Robin is in. But you know what? We're not going to do a show about Batman tonight, and that's what this would turn into if we started because I know I have feelings.
Couldn't agree with you
about
more.
Robin, that go one way. Steven has a different set of opinions about Robin, and we're just going to have to leave it, okay?
Everybody has feelings about Robin, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Well, okay, exactly. That's well said. We're just going to agree that I'm right, and we're going to move on because we've got some other important stuff that we need to get into tonight. But we'll watch that. It's a good thing we're recording this because we're going to go back after the next Batman movie comes out. We'll see how close you nailed it, Michael. And if you did well, we'll let you make predictions on other movies maybe at some point in the future.
I will affirm or, you know, retract as soon as they confirm that the Nolan brothers are going to write the script and do the film. If the Nolans aren't involved, then all bets are off.
Yeah, it might be another reboot for all we know at that point. Yeah.
You know, don't do a reboot. Here's a thought. Okay, look, we're on this subject now. Briefly, how about, isn't it time for a Marvel-DC crossover movie? Wouldn't that be awesome? You know, I'd like to see a Superman and Spider-Man movie, okay? But wouldn't, like, a Batman and Wolverine movie be just righteous?
Yeah.
Have them meet up, you know?
Would be pretty cool.
I'm just throwing it out there, okay? If anybody's listening. That's a movie I would pay good money to go see. I guess they're different production companies making the movies. But that doesn't matter. At the beginning of movies anymore, you see, like, you know, every studio in the world has a hand in making these things, right?
That's right.
That shouldn't be an issue. Anyway. All right, so let's move on to what the show is actually going to be about tonight. That we've whiled away almost our entire first segment here on just having fun, but we've got a few kind of substantial things that we wanted to talk about this evening. Beginning with just a recap of a couple of things we explored on the blog earlier this week. A couple of topics of interest. Nothing really heavy there. With the first one, which is time travel destinations. Just kind of want to do a round robin and see where people are in terms of where they would like to go traveling through time. I do have some ground rules for that, and we'll get into that. And then this very interesting position that private space developers are taking, telling the government to get off their back, telling the government to back off, that their era is past, they need to be out of the development of space. I wrote a piece on that, and maybe we can chat about that for a few minutes. Then coming up in the second half of the program, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about our upcoming 10-part series. It's only 2 weeks away, actually, that we're beginning that, so it's near at hand. A 10-part series called The World Transformed. We're going to talk a little bit about what the ideas behind that are, and we'll talk about the first 5 parts of the series. We'll at least give a sneak preview of what the topics are going to be for those. So that's our ambitious agenda for the next 46 minutes. Does that sound right, Stephen? Did I leave anything?
Yeah, out? Yeah. That let's get to it, man. We got more to cover than we have time to do them.
So true. So typical. Well, this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're getting ready to talk about time travel destinations. And if you're interested in sharing where you'd like to go if you're traveling through time, please leave a comment at blog.speculus.com. Or if you're listening live, join us in the chat room and tell us all about it there. And Michael will we'll repeat some of the better answers as we collect a few. So, yeah, I don't know. Who was it? It was Cracked Magazine. It was one of these. I'm sorry, it was not Cracked Magazine. It was, I'll have to go look it up now. One moment. Oh, it was Manolith. This is actually a new publication for me. I guess this is the equivalent of a Maxim-type magazine, only online. Okay, Manolith.
Okay.
They had the 15 essential moments to, and then in parens, revisit if you had a time machine. And, you know, they gave their take on it. First thing, my initial observation about this was, I don't count traveling to the future as time travel, because we're all doing that anyway. And if you want to, you know, if you want to get to any particular destination in the future, you only have to live to see it. So I think that that it's a misuse of a time machine to travel to the future. The only the only legitimate use of traveling to the future is to get back from the past, in my view. Now, so I'm discounting their future ones, and they had some interesting ones: the Trinity test, the Roswell crash, the birth of the first true artificial intelligence. Okay, here's part of the problem with that. All right, is how do you know when that's going to happen?
Yeah, well, you just go forward until it does, I guess.
Yeah, what do you set your dial for exactly? Or you go past it and then you go back, right? You see, you still end up traveling back.
There's an interesting year that keeps coming up in predictions, and that's 2030. Ray Kurzweil and many others see that as a key time period. Maybe the technological singularity. They're not saying it's going to occur January 1st, 2030, but they think around that time would be a good bet.
That could be interesting, but I think again, we're heading there fast enough. So
yeah.
Why jump ahead?
It'll be fun to watch it happen at normal speed, at one time speed, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Now, some of these others from the past: the fall of Rome, the Battle of Thermopylae, which is the movie 300, Helen of Troy, just to see how hot she really was. The discovery of beer. Again, this would be hard to go back to because we don't know exactly when that occurred.
It might have happened many times.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. So you could potentially get one of them. And man's discovery of fire. Again, same kind of thing. Here's a good one.
Based on my own experience with beer making, that first beer is probably going to be pretty lousy.
I'm betting that was not good at all.
Yeah.
Well, you know, just one thing. Before the earliest beer was probably, I've read somewhere, probably invented at a time that we hadn't even figured out, like, millstones and all that kind of stuff. So they probably ground it up by, like, chewing the grain up and spitting it out. Okay.
Yeah, it was just fermented. It was fermented grain still in grain form.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that.
Not your best beer.
Then they had the comet that killed the dinosaurs. They had going to the future to see the Cubs win the World Series again. We don't know if that will ever happen. So, you know, that was their list. I liked some of the items on it, but I felt that they were kind of missing the boat. I think it's a bad idea to go, as I said, to go forward. I like to go back. So I came up with my own list, and I don't know how many I did. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I came up with 8 that I thought were good past destinations in addition to the ones that were listed there. And I'll rattle these off real fast. I thought the fall of Troy would be interesting, not just to check out how hot Helen was, but interesting, I think, would be to find out whether that horse thing really occurred.
Yeah, whether that was just legend or
yeah, did they really
for real.
Do that?
It's because it's a pretty dang good idea, but it can only be done once in history.
You really,
you know?
Only do that once. Especially
yeah, once it's done, everybody hears about it, and then, you know, I mean, we couldn't show up like, you know, at a town wall with like, I don't know, a hollow horse anymore. That just wouldn't work.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Then I listed the Wright brothers' first flight. I think that would be awesome to go back and have a look at that. Hannibal crossing the Alps with elephants, I think, would be an exciting historical thing to witness. And then the next one is the big whack. This is theoretical, but it'd be good to go find out. It's kind of like the comet or asteroid or meteor that extincted the dinosaurs. This is really the favored theory for how we got the moon, and it had to do with a small Mars-like planet crashing into what was at that time a somewhat bigger than it is now Earth, creating a whole bunch of debris and a smaller Earth with a good-sized moon off to one side. So, as I mentioned, you'd probably want a spaceship in addition to a time machine for that one. I don't think you'd want to try to witness that one from the surface of the Earth. That would,
no.
That would not be good.
It wouldn't be much to see. It would be like, oh, here it comes, and then, you know, whatever.
I think the next on the list is JFK assassination. Here's what I think is interesting about this, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm cynical, but I think if we could go back and look and look and look and look, people would go back, they'd look at it from every possible angle, and we still wouldn't know for sure.
I'm kind of a lone gunman guy. I believe
so
that Warren Commission got it right, more or less, and so.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that everyone would buy it, though, no matter how solid the evidence was. I think that.
Well, obviously, if you came back and reported it, having seen it and reported exactly that, well, Warren Commission basically got it right, then you'd be part of the conspiracy.
That's right.
You know, so
anybody. Well, anyway, we won't spend too much time on that.
Yeah.
I think it would be interesting to know for sure exactly how it came down, or just to have confirmation that it came down the way we think. Then I listed Cleopatra, you know, because the guy wanted to see how hot Helen of Troy was. This would be a good point of comparison if we're into those kinds of things. D-Day, since we celebrated the anniversary of that, put my flag out yesterday for the, 65th anniversary? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
65th anniversary, well, of D-Day yesterday.
It was 65, I believe.
Yeah, again, you'd want some kind of vantage point for that. In fact, one of the commenters said, you really don't want to go back and try to view past battles.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably a lot of sense in that. And then my last one, kind of controversial, I'm sure, but biblical miracles. Go back and find out one way or another, for sure, absolutely, what happened with these things. Although, as with the JFK assassination, I have this feeling that people would go back and they would see exactly what they want to see, no matter what they actually saw, one way or the other.
Yeah.
Whether they're skeptics or believers, I'm not sure that it would actually settle the issue to the extent that we want it to. And that's one of the things that I think that's interesting about the idea of traveling back into the past. We think it would settle things. It would probably raise a bunch more questions, and we'd be as uncertain about the past as we are now, only in a different way. So that was my list. Stephen, you got some additional thoughts on that?
The printing press, that would be a cool moment to see. I would like to go back and converse with Benjamin Franklin, because I just have to imagine that he'd just probably be one of the most interesting people to talk to. Thomas Jefferson as well. Leonardo da Vinci. All interesting folks.
Or like to go back and talk to a young Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay. Da Vinci or DiCaprio?
Short range trip back.
Right? Yeah, that's right.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, those guys would all be good. In fact, one of the commenters mentioned go back and see the Library of Alexandria, which we had just talked about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And take a photocopy machine while you're at it.
Right. Well, that kind of got me thinking. I mean, if there was such a thing as travel to the past, that would be the real scientific value of it, wouldn't it? To be able to go back and retrieve things that otherwise have been completely lost, because we talked about what a huge loss it was to civilization when that library burned, and a good deal of the knowledge that existed at that time is just, you know, gone for good. But not gone for good if we could go back and get it. So that would be,
you know, so much settled history would be unsettled by that ability. We all have our, you know, we. You know, it's been said that the history is written by the victors, and I think that there's a great deal of truth to that. I mean, we flatter ourselves with our own history to a large extent, and you know, going back and actually witnessing some of these things, we might not like everything that we see and discover. So, I don't know. If they never invent a time machine that allows us to go back to the past, maybe I'm okay with that.
Yeah. We definitely have the view of it that we have. I mean, we're working from that model. Although, I think the idea of setting the record straight is a very appealing one. I think about the story we did probably about 6 months ago about the supernova that Tycho Brahe observed in Poland back in about 500 years ago in the 1400s, whatever that would have been.
Yeah.
And how we saw the bounce of that phenomenon off some distant cloud in space, we're able to observe that and see it better than he was able to. That little incident actually gives me hope that maybe at some point we might be able to glean more of the past than we've been able to. Certainly, if you just pore over the manuscripts, you're going to get the point of view of the winners, or you know, just of the perspective that, that people have at the time. Did I mention Richard III last week, or have I talked about that on this show?
I don't believe so.
You know, what's his name? Ian McKellen, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a version of Richard III back in the middle part of the 90s. He did a production of it. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's really cool. It's set in the 30s, and it's set very realistically in a kind of an alternate history London of the 30s, and Richard is kind of portrayed as this mid-20th century fascist. I mean, the dialogue is all Shakespeare, but the sets and the costumes and just what you see going on between the lines is this guy taking over the way Mussolini did, or the way Hitler did. So it's this it's really cool.
Did he take over England? Is that where he is, or?
Yeah, yes, he was king of England between Henry VI and Henry VII, I think is where he falls in the scheme of things. And of course, at that point, you're in alternate history. You're in science fiction. I mean,
sure, yeah.
McKellen has taken a quote-unquote historical play and made it into science fiction. But even if you look at the historical play, I read a book years ago by Josephine Tay, who writes detective novels. And the book was called The Daughter of Time, from the saying, "Truth is the daughter of time." And it was about this police inspector. He's holed up in the hospital. He's broken his back or something, so he's on his back for like weeks. And he gets interested in the story of Richard III, and he starts researching, and he realizes that what Shakespeare wrote about him, what Thomas More wrote about him, what all these guys wrote about him, total smear job, and that the real guy was probably, between the lines, if you can glean enough history from reliable sources, a pretty decent guy. But, you know, nobody knows about that guy. We all know about the, you know, lock the two princes in the tower and, you know, my kingdom for a horse and all that stuff. So it's really a species of that, the victors writing the history. Although, even with available information, and of course this was a novel, but all the stuff cited was true. Even, you know, with the available information, they were able to get to figuring out, oh, maybe there's more to this guy than meets the eye. And if that's true, you know, there might be more to a lot of folks in the past.
Yeah, you can always, history is always subject to revision.
Exactly. So I don't know, Michael. Any thoughts from our friends in the chat room about destinations in time?
I was the one who put up late September through late October of 1908 in downtown Chicago. That would put you. It would accomplish two things. One, it gets you into a major metropolitan area in the era where cars were really just starting to take place and people were electrifying and getting indoor plumbing, and I think that's an interesting transition. Plus, the October 1908 was the last year the Cubs won the World Series, so you'd get to see that.
So that's kind of a, you know, that's a two-for-one.
If I was going to go to Chicago of the past, I'd want us to go to see their World Fair in the late 1800s.
Yeah, 1893 would have been good. And of course, that was the big World Fair that was largely done to demo electrification.
That's right. Right.
So you get to see all sorts of interesting things. But you know, the Cubs didn't win the World Series that year, so you know, you gotta flip a coin. The other thing I was thinking, although I didn't start to write this list, was anything that was sort of the heart of the known universe at the time. So like Rome, right at the peak of the empire, or whatever, London in 1895 or wherever, whenever, just because it's what we think of as the heart of it, although I suspect plenty of people at the time didn't really think of it as the heart of anything.
Right. It would just have been a sort of a mundane place in a sense if you were to go there at that time. And the other interesting thing about that is those are periods we've seen portrayed multiple times. Be interesting to go back and see how wrong the movie's got it, just on the everyday details, right?
Right.
That they couldn't possibly have known about if you didn't go back and look, because nobody ever bothered to record just mundane.
Or you can't depict it in a useful way. I suspect, for example, that Rome, even at the peak of the empire, smelled pretty bad most of the time. Live animals and all over the place and sewage. Although it did move out of the city, it didn't move very fast.
Yeah, I think actually we can agree that I was going to say the ancient world, but really most of the pre-modern world smelled pretty bad, and most of the modern world actually doesn't smell that great when you come right down to it. It's,
any place where there's large groups of bacteria, let's just say, but you know, any place where there's large groups of people or animal, it's you got to keep it clean or it smells bad.
I think little enclaves of places that smell okay are probably a 20th century invention, pretty much, with a few exceptions. You know, there are probably a few English country gardens and stuff like that back in the 19th century, but that would be an interesting history of the world right there. That someone
the history of how civilization smelled, huh?
Exactly. And we're using the word smelled in both senses there. All right, well, this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We've been talking about time travel destinations. We're going to talk a little bit about space and where we're going in space and how we're getting there. And then we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about what's going to be happening on a very special series of programs that we'll be doing coming up, starting actually just in a couple of weeks now. If you're listening live, please join us in our chat room or feel free to leave a comment at blog.speculist.com. So, Stephen, I don't know if you had a chance to look at this. This piece about privatizing space development. It's very interesting. You've got these private space folks getting together basically and saying, get out of the way, to the government.
Right.
Basically making the case that at this point, government agencies, and particularly NASA, are slowing us down getting into space more than providing any actual contribution.
I would like to know what their arguments are as far as how they are being slowed down. But, you know, NASA, I mean, what is NASA doing exactly to stand in the way?
Well, you know what? I just realized I'm looking at my story. I didn't actually link the original story, did I? That's bad. Sorry. I'll be sure and include a link there. One of the interesting ones was not aimed at NASA. It was aimed at the FCC, and they talked about just this ridiculous amount of red tape that they have to go through in order to get a communication satellite launched. This was one of the primary complaints that they had. The objection seemed to be primarily that that while NASA isn't initiating an awful lot of really interesting activity in space, it does very much want to have the monopoly on everything that happens there. So people who are trying to do interesting new things in the private sector, people who want to do prototypes of production facilities in space to be able to produce goods. There's this whole notion of zero-G manufacturing, which is probably going to come online as a viable way of making very precise equipment here in the next couple of decades. It's hard to get going on those kinds of projects because NASA pretty much owns that, and they'll set up those experiments via the shuttle and via the International Space Station, but they don't want other people horning in. So it's that kind of stuff where NASA's not taking an awful lot of leaps forward, but
they're staying just far enough out that it's difficult to contribute anything meaningful as a private company, I guess.
Well, that's the argument. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, my thinking is mixed on this because I think when you tell NASA to get out of the way of exploring space, I always look back and say, well, yeah, but, you know, Apollo,
space is kind of
right?
my thought is space is pretty big. How can NASA be in the way, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's a great question, but that just goes to show you the power of bureaucracy, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, that's the long and the short is they can't block the heavens, but you know they can block our access to them, or these developers would claim they block their access to them through paperwork. I guess is pretty much what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So I look at it and I say, well, you know, surely the organization that gave us the Apollo program could still do more good. That's my initial thought when I think, you know, if NASA was able to pull that off. Ought there not to be a way that they could still be a useful entity? And, you know, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. And I think one of the things, it's hard to get into space. It's an expensive, hard thing to do to break the gravity well, to actually get out into space. And, to some extent, it might be helpful, I don't know if politically is the right word, but to have a punching bag or a bad guy to beat up on if you're in the space industry and say, you know, if it weren't for these guys standing in our way, we'd be out there in space now. Well, you know, I mean, you have to have a craft that are capable of punching through the atmosphere and achieving a breakthrough velocity. And it's an expensive thing to do. And, think of the size of the rockets that took us to the moon, how big they had to be. You know, I mean, this is not something that a small company could do. I mean, I suppose a monster company like Microsoft or Google or somebody like that would have the funds to do it. But it's not something that you can do in your backyard. The astronaut farmer was a great movie. I enjoyed it, but it was not realistic. You just can't produce in your backyard a rocket that's big enough to put you into orbit. It just doesn't work yet.
Operative word there, yet.
Yet. You're right.
We can't do it now. And, you know, per the show I did a couple weeks ago when I kind of got into that whole topic, I think we're rapidly heading towards the day when we can do that, when that kind of access to space is much, much more widespread than it is now, when we look at something like Virgin Galactic, and that will seem very quaint and like very small potatoes compared to what people are actually going to be able to do. So you've got this great frontier of space that, you know, how open it has been has not been much of an issue up to this point because there haven't been that many people trying to access it.
That's right.
You know, not that many people have been trying to go into space. They haven't been trying to send things into space or accomplish objectives up there. And now you have this burgeoning business sector, and people are saying, we want to get up there. We've got things that we want to do up there, and you're slowing us down. And I think you're right. I think that there's a real strong case to be made that any time you're trying to organize something like this, it's great to have the adversary. And what better than a government agency to say, see, they're holding us back, they're keeping us down, they're the reason that we can't get anything done. But still, ought there not be a way, if NASA's interested in directing that kind of research, for them to partner with these people to make it possible? Just for NASA to become the agency that it once was, which facilitated great things happening in space, you know. Can it become that again? And my question was, would we need some huge project again? And, you know, it was really this driving, we've got to get to the moon, we're going to lose the Cold War, the communists are going to take over the world, we've got to make a stand, and where space became this battlefield in the Cold War, enabled NASA to do tremendous things and enabled the government to do tremendous things, the private sector working in cooperation with the government. I mean, whatever else you want to say about Apollo, it was a magnificent human achievement, one of the greatest things that has ever happened in human history. Now, can lightning strike again? I guess that's the question. Or did we just get lucky with a government agency that one time? I know Will is throwing some ideas out in the chat room, and he had left some comments on the post. Michael, what's the tenor of the discussion in the chat room?
That bureaucracy. I made the point that bureaucracy isn't necessarily always an enemy. That I could imagine somebody wanting to do something, how should we say, dangerous in orbit. That would be way more dangerous in orbit than it would be on the surface. And, you know, in that case, I kind of want them to slow down and do that. Now, I don't know what that might be. I agree with Will that the physics reentry makes the transference of any physical substance difficult, and that someone that's got the means and
and perhaps the will to function in orbit is likely not to be Dr. No wanting to take over the world, but, you know, that's the thing. I don't know that. And no individual is likely to know that, so I kind of feel better knowing that someone somewhere is. On the other hand, so NASA's in your way. Just go launch from some country that doesn't give a rip about NASA.
That's an interesting point. I know that there are international treaties governing what you can and can't do in space, but they're pretty broad. I mean, it's, you can't put weapons up there.
Yeah, if you're Virgin Galactic and you feel like you're being held back by the U.S. government, set up in Tijuana or someplace, you know?
Do you think Vanuatu is a signatory to the International Space Treaty or some other South Pacific country that happens to be in the right latitude, like French Guiana? I doubt it.
Easter Island or someplace like that?
There you go. Yeah, I think if these guys are seriously trying to do something legitimate and good and feel like the government's holding them back, that would be the... seems like that would be that would be the option. That would be the way to go. I think the point's well taken, though, that there is a role for government. And you know, I would actually think it's probably less. There's probably less concern for harm that they're going to cause on Earth than there is just probably for harm that they'll cause themselves. If you're talking about people moving into space, you know, actually people traveling into space. Or messing up stuff that's already up there, right? You don't want to put a satellite in an orbit that's going to decay and crash into another satellite or mess up.
Exactly Will's point, that damage to the existing infrastructure and the sunk investment is a large risk.
Yeah.
Right.
We got enough space trash as it is. We sure don't need more.
Yeah, somebody needs to actually get in that business, right? The whole let's clean up the space trash.
Yeah.
And I think if they did it with really big mechanical flying through space robots with like huge magnetic arms.
Just the coolness factor of that would make it worthwhile.
Throwing that out there, yeah. That's how I would do it, okay?
A Gundam mecha in space cleaning up. You'd have to have a little spear and put it in a bag, you know. That'd be awesome.
A really big bag.
Yeah.
A really big, I don't know, Mylar, I don't know what it would be made of. I love that. And then here's the cool thing. When the bag gets full, what do? They just re-enter.
Yeah, that's right. Throw it into the atmosphere at that point.
It's all gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, now that's a great idea. I don't know if NASA's ready for that idea, though. That's
right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if the world's quite ready for our genius yet, Phil. I don't know.
Well, that's why we do this show. We're getting the world ready. Every week we lay a little more out there so that people can grow a bit more comfortable with the idea. But I think they really do need to gear up. I think that they need to be focused less on piddly little projects and more on the fact that the technology, it will be with us soon, that will enable massive movement of material and people into space. And if there are safety issues around that, if there are, you know, other legal considerations that need to be put in place around that, they should really be thinking about that and getting ready for that. Plus, they should be doing something big. They should be getting us ready for a big, I don't know, trip to Jupiter or Saturn or something like that. It seems like that's what they do well.
A permanent base on the moon, I think, would be a good first step, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the other thing they've done really well is robotic exploration of the planets. In fact, maybe that becomes their mission, and they stay out of human flight into space, and somebody else takes that over completely. I don't know. There's any number of ways that it could be approached, and we probably won't settle it to everyone's satisfaction here tonight. But I find it very interesting that that's a discussion that's starting to take place, and I bet we'll hear a lot more about that in the near future. Certainly in the years to come, we're going to hear a lot more about that.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're zipping through numerous topics this evening. We're getting ready to spend a few minutes talking about a special series that we have coming up on the program, starting actually just in about 2 weeks. If you're listening live and you'd like to join us, we're having a fun discussion in our chat room, or please feel free to leave a comment at blog.speculist.com. Well, I think it's time to talk a little more about the world transformed. We've mentioned it vaguely, I think, a couple of times. I don't think we've said too much about it up to this point. Is that right, Stephen?
We've mentioned it briefly, I believe, about if not last week, the week before. But no, we haven't really laid out what we intend to do with this, you know, a fairly lengthy 10-part series. This is our opportunity to kind of let you know where it is we want to go with this.
Yeah, this is a big thing we're doing. We've not tried anything quite at this scale in the past, but I think it's important to do this. And what got me thinking about it was actually in, I'm not sure if it's the latest issue or maybe the one prior to the one that's out now, but H Plus Magazine, Werner Vinge had an article called Singularity 101. And I thought, what a great idea. You know, let's step back and let's explore this one really important concept just from the ground up and see what the implications are, see what it means to us, and try to fit it into the context of what we know about the world. Well, as I was thinking about that, I said that is a huge one, but it is one of several possible transformations or likely transformations that we're tracking on this program, that we track at Fast Forward Radio and that we track at The Speculus. And just to provide a little bit of context, I think it's important to go back to some discussions we had, would have been, I think, late last year, maybe even this time last year, actually, as I think about it, about something that we call the human imperative. This idea that human beings are these reconfigurers of the universe who are looking to create the optimum configuration of the universe that we've been working, you know, locally here on this planet up to this point pretty much, but it's an ongoing effort that we want to improve our personal circumstances or the circumstances of the group to which we belong or to the entire world around us, that human beings have been really engaged in this. You know, no one declared it, no one ever said, hey, let's have the human imperative, but it just seems to be built into the structure and the fabric of what humanity is. So we start out back in the earliest days, we build tools, we start developing ways of passing information from one generation to the next. We begin organizing our society. We take our hunter-gatherer clans and organize labor, distribute knowledge, as we were talking about last week, in such a way that we decrease the likelihood that we're going to be wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
And from those earliest improvements, you get this compounding of improvements. Because once you've improved the human situation a little, well, that makes it that much easier. You've got a little bit of leverage to make that next set of improvements. And as you
That's
keep
right.
going from those earliest stages through the ages, you get to science and to technology. You get to culture and to commerce and to everything that we think about that makes up the whole complex of humanity.
You know, in the earliest levels of civilization, everybody worked all the time just to fulfill basic needs, and there was not there was very little opportunity for somebody to pursue other ends. And,
exactly.
And you know, as time goes by, and we become wealthier, and we become better at fulfilling our basic human needs, you know, food, water, shelter, things like that, then the opportunity becomes available to do greater things. But I mean, you simply did not have that opportunity before. Who knows what, you know, let's, you know, talking about Leonardo da Vinci, we might have had geniuses of his caliber back in the Stone Age, but I guarantee you he was busy. You know, probably doing a pretty fantastic job, maybe, of hunting and gathering. But
maybe one of those geniuses invented the wheel, which probably got invented multiple times before it finally stuck, or you know, some new variation on the slingshot or something.
Or how to start a fire instead of just keeping it going for generations. You know, having captured it from lightning or something. But it's, you know, yeah, exactly. But go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, once you have an improvement in place and it's entrenched, it gives you that stepping stone, and you can take the next one. So we went from being hunter-gatherers to being agriculture, to being agrarian, and then to having civilization. We had a written language, and over time we developed the scientific method, and true technology begins to come online with the Industrial Revolution. I mean, what we really think of as technology, right?
Right.
then we're building cities, we're building highways, we're building dams. Before long, we've got ocean liners, we've got jet aircraft, we've got computers harnessing information, we've got computer networks, we've got broadcast television and radio.
And here we are, we're standing on the shoulders of all of, all of this creativity and creation by prior folks. Where are we going from here, I guess, is our question with this 10-part series, isn't it?
That's exactly right, because if you look at that compounding of benefits, if you look at that whole transformation from let's make sharper stones to, you know, Twitter, right? I mean, and everything that came in between. All of that whole sweep of progress is probably nothing. It pales in comparison to what's likely to come, to what actually is likely to come in our lifetimes. Because right now we're at the threshold of probably what will be viewed later as the greatest period of transformation in human history. And that's because of a convergence between our how we harness matter, you know, which we did to build all the cities and all that kind of stuff, and energy, and how we harness information, that those two things are converging. And that's goes to a lot of what we talk about. We talk about programmable matter and nanotechnology and artificial intelligence. But when those two things meet, you've got a collision that is extraordinary in its ability to transform who we are and what our world is. Even how we define what is real, I think, stands to be changed. So we need to get ready for these transformations. People need to be thinking about these because these are coming, and we need to make the most of the benefits that they can provide, and we need to do what we can to avoid the risks that they represent. So the purpose of our 10-part series is to explore 10 takes on these coming transformations. I think it's a pretty good list. I think we're pretty close to nailing down the big topics, the big categories of what these changes are. And it's got a kind of a two-pronged purpose. For people who are brand new to any of these ideas, we hope that this will be a good introduction.
Well, should we go ahead and kind of let our audience know what at least the titles are the subjects are of the various parts?
You know what I think we'll do is tonight we'll talk about the first five.
Okay.
And next week we'll talk about the final five, so that way we kind of do a countdown leading up to the series overall. But what I was saying was that it's a two-pronged thing. For people who aren't familiar with these ideas at all, it's an introduction. For people who have spent some time on them, it's really an opportunity to look at how all the different parts fit together. So we want to try to accomplish both of those. And to answer your question, let me just talk about what the first five, and I'll just give you the titles of the segments that we'll be doing for the first five shows. The first one is called Our Thinking Transformed, and it deals with imagination, creativity, and a world transformed. So this one is really kind of the preparatory work, kind of the basic spade work we need to do to get us ready to talk about the rest of these topics. But we need to think about how we think about the world, how we educate our children to think about the world, and how that needs to change rapidly, both for ourselves and for coming generations, in order to try to cope with, to try to deal with this level of change that's occurring.
Well, one thing, I mean, is that a lot of the things that we may train our kids to do will be obsolete at some point. And maybe one of the things we need to think about is, teaching to the extent that we can to be flexible, be ready to be a lifelong scholar, be ready to, you know, chunk half of of what you've been doing to jump to the next level when the next level comes along, because otherwise you're going to be left behind.
Yeah, I think that flexibility to adapt and the ability to visualize, the ability to imagine the world very differently, to see it even shortly before it's upon you, rather than only to be able to contend with it when it's upon you, is going to be a huge skill set difference between those who do well in this era and those who struggle with it.
Yeah.
So, we'll be getting into that. Our second program is called Mortality Transformed, and we're going to talk about the era of the indefinite lifespan. So obviously this is life extension that we'll be talking about.
Which is a big difference between indefinite and infinite. What we're talking about is a future in which aging is considered a disease and it's treated like anything else. And you just periodically go back and get treatment for it.
Exactly right. We're talking
like a chronic illness that we all have, you know.
Yeah, we're talking about treating aging as an illness and what that does for human lifespan. And you're right, that doesn't make us immortal. It doesn't expand our lifespan to infinity. It expands it to, there are various estimates, hundreds of years, maybe 1,000 years. Those numbers just start to sound crazy when you start throwing them out there. And certainly, if it was even 200 years, if it was even 250 years, it would be a huge sweeping change for humanity. But there's every reason to believe that it will be even greater than that. Although I want to point out that there are degrees of indefinite. So when we talk about an indefinite lifespan related to healthy life extension, that's one kind of indefinite lifespan. Later in the list, we talk about other means of achieving an indefinite lifespan, and that one's got a much longer shelf life than just healthy life extension. So I still don't think that we get to infinite. Infinite is that's a long time, right? That's a long time to live. Not sure we get to that. The third week, we're going to talk about the material world transformed, and that's basically the nanotechnology revolution, subject we've talked about many times on this program. Probably have blogged on that subject. Well, that and life extension and artificial intelligence, probably more than any other topics at The Speculist. I would say those three have dominated what we've done on this program.
A subset of that is energy, and I've had a lot of fascination for that the last couple of years. How do we deal with the world's with peak oil, if that's a problem? How do we deal with that? Well, we figure something out, and nanotech could be a big part of that.
It absolutely has a huge role to play, and I think that's an important point to make, that when we talk about the material world transformed, it's the transformation of how we interact with matter, but it's also that big transformation of how we interact with energy. Both of those very much come into play. The next one is the first one on the topic of society transformed. We actually have two topics on society transformed. The second one of those will actually show up in week 8, but society transformed 1 is on the topic of risks, dystopias, and unsettling futures. So we're going to look at the downside a little bit. We're going to look at as all of these new changes come online, as these different approaches to the world become manifest, what's the downside to that? What's the risk? What do we have to be afraid of? And how do we prevent those scenarios so that we make sure that, being good humans, following the human imperative, we keep on that optimum scenario at all times. So that's week 4. And then week 5 is called Humanity Transformed, Reworking the Human Architecture. We're going to talk about changes to the human structure over and above the healthy life extension. We're talking about improvements to our mental capacity, our physical capacity, our ability to sense, to interact really with the world around us. So that's the first 5 weeks in a very quick nutshell. And next week I'll take you through the second half of the list. And before the series begins, we'll have blog posts up. We're going to do some special stuff around this, because this is going to be a very, very special 10 weeks for us on Fast Forward Radio. I'm very excited about it. Really, really looking forward to it.
Have some special guests as well, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, we've got some. We've got a lot of invitations out, and we've got a few responses so far. We've got one very exciting guest lined up so far, and we'll be making announcements about who the complete roster is probably a few days before the series begins. But that reminds me that we should also note that the program will be moving to Tuesday evenings, starting. Next week will be on Sunday. The following week will be on Tuesday, and for the duration of the summer, and maybe from now on, if it likes us, Fast Forward Radio will air on Tuesday evenings, and it will be a half hour later than normal. So mark that in your calendars, folks. We're going to be shifting 2 days and 30 minutes later for Fast Forward Radio and the world. We're going to the show transformed in order to get us ready for the world.
We have to show our ability to be flexible.
Exactly.
As part of it.
Imagine the world differently. There you go. Okay, so that's where we are with that for this week. As I said, we'll finish out the list next week, and we'll have some more details about that series. And what's our music this evening, Steve?
The band is This Is a Shakedown, and the song this week is O, and that's O-H with an exclamation point.
It's not a band called O with a song called This Is a Shakedown?
No, it's the band is This Is a Shakedown, the song is O.
All righty, so we'll listen to O by This Is a Shakedown, and thank you, Stephen, for putting that together and for everything you do here at Fast Forward Radio. And, Michael, thanks to you, to our friends in the chat room, everyone listening live and everyone listening by any format. Thanks for being part of Fast Forward Radio. We look forward to being with you all the next time. And until then, live to see it. Oh, that reminds me. I guess I have to play the song, right?
Yeah, since you got the switchboard, it's all you, man.
Dang, I've got to remember to do this. Okay, now we'll listen to O by This Is Shakedown. Until next time, live to see it.